Okay, Chevra, good evening. Thank you for coming. We've been talking about questions of Geiros for the last little while. And tonight I'd like to talk about the topic of adoption and conversion of minors. Lu Yitzu, you're in unfortunate situations when couples don't have children, so they go through a process of adoption. And one of the questions that's always asked is it better to adopt a Jewish child, a child from Jewish parents, or is it better to adopt a non-Jewish child? This is the question that gets asked. A couple years ago, someone called me up on the phone. It was like a very strange question. And they call me on the phone, and they say, Rabbi Schwartz, I hear you're a rabbi in Washington Heights, and they tell me their name, and they were interested in adopting, and they wanted to know which Rav could give them advice about how to properly adopt a Jewish child. So I explained to them, you know, I think that, you know, obviously adoption is something that if you need to adopt a child, it's a wonderful thing to do, like we'll explain in a few minutes, but it's better to adopt a non-Jewish child than a Jewish child. So they're like all upset, like, why are you saying this? I'm like, you're calling me for advice. Like, I'm giving you advice. The advice is, it's better to adopt a non-Jewish child. Now, why is it that it's better to adopt a non-Jewish child? So the answer is, if you adopt a Jewish child, you're potentially getting into some serious problems. For example, said child might not know who their biological parents are, right? And there's a very serious concern of Shema Yisa Achiv Esachoso, that maybe the brother could marry his sister, no? In other words, this child is going to end up, years from now, going to try to get married, and that could be a serious problem, Shema Yisa Achiv Esachoso. A Jewish child, potentially there are mamzeres issues involved, no? How come a child is left for adoption? So, traditionally in Judaism, it was assumed that the reason why parents would leave a child for adoption is because a married woman became pregnant from someone not her husband. That child is a mamzer. A mamzer can't marry, right? B'kohol. The mamzer is very limited in terms of... if a married woman, if a married woman has a child from a man other than her husband, that's mamzerus, right? Let's say though it's a pnuya. Let's say it's a single girl who has a child out of wedlock, which could also be a bit of a stigma. So, in many cases, the Gemara says that we're worried that the child might be some sort of mamzer midrabanon. In cases like this, the Gemara at the end of Kiddushin has rules of Shtuki and Asufi. Shtuki is that whenever the kid says daddy, mom says shut up, kid. That's Shtuki, like keep quiet. Asufi is a kid who's just a foundling, literally, a kid who's gathered in, brought to the home. Even though usually we'd assume that when it comes to a single woman, a pnuya, a single unmarried woman who has a child, usually we assume that rove people who she would have a child with would not create mamzerus. But that would only be, the Gemara says, in the case where the man comes to the woman. We're always aware that maybe she went and tried to go to the man. If the man comes to the woman, we'd follow the rove. If she goes to him, that would be a case of kavua. So therefore, we're worried about potential suffik mamzer issues of shtuki and asufi. When the child is the child of a Jewish parent. So we try to not adopt children of Jewish parents. We try not to. It's far preferred to adopt children of non-Jewish parents, hence we're going to have a conversation about conversion. Yeah. What do they recommend?
Why can't they have Jewish homes
instead of
adopted? No, so you can. So basically what we recommend in most cases is that you should find out who the parents were. And that solves all these issues. In other words, you find out that this so-and-so is the child of so-and-so and so-and-so, and you tell the kid. Later on, you tell the kid, by the way, your biological parents. I think today most psychologists assume that it's sound advice, you might know this better than me, but it's sound advice to tell the kid A, that they were adopted. We'll talk about that later on in tonight's shiur. B, if you know who the parents are, tell them. Right? And once you tell them, so we won't have these concerns. So that's really the preferred thing. Years ago, it was really not in style to tell kids who the parents were. Today, it's coming much more in style, and I think that certainly has halachic preference. So, yes, if a Jewish kid is up for adoption anyway, no reason not to take him or her, but right, you really should try to find out who the parents are. And if parents have a choice of adopting Jewish and non-Jewish, there's also just, like, I don't want to burst anyone's bubble, there are many more non-Jews in this world than there are Jews. So when it comes to adopting a non-Jewish child gives you greater chance of getting somebody. Yeah.
But the thing is the focus on the parents who need to adopt the child, and this is, so there's more potential to satisfy this parental need out there, or is the emphasis on providing a home for a Jewish child?
But, no, so I mean, again, I think that's sort of what Eliezer was asking. Yeah. Obviously, the emphasis is on both, but in many cases, you know, when the parents are looking to adopt, they're looking primarily to fulfill their own needs.
Well, that's a whole...
And that might not be proper or improper, but in many cases, that's the way it is. Okay, yeah, but yeah.
Today also, the laws have changed, so it is now possible to find out this information. My father was adopted, and 18 years ago, it was against the law.
Right.
The records were sealed.
Right.
Today, you can find out the information, and if you can find out, you should find out as much as possible. Again, it's important for the kid. The kid gets a connection. All these things are wonderful. Now, a few things to be mentioned about adoption in general before we speak about the conversion element. The Chafetz Chaim writes in his Sefer, by the way, a lot of what I'm saying, Rav Shechter wrote an article in the Yeshiva publication called Chavrusa years and years and years ago called Adoption in Jewish Law. The funniest thing about this article is that Rav Hershel Shechter Shlita's father, Rabbi Melech Shechter, Zichrono Livracha, wrote an article called Various Aspects of Adoption. In this article, he quotes, "My son Hagon Rav Hershel says this." I thought that was really, really cool and interesting, but...
Is that in the
journal, RJJ Journal, Volume 4. It's an old article in the RJJ Journal. By the way, he was Nifter around 3, 4, 5 years ago, but he was a big mumchen adoption. Rabbi Einemer from Silver Spring was one of the go-to rabbonim poskim in adoption. He was supposed to be a real force in this area. Now, the Chofetz Chaim writes in his Sefer that, you know, unfortunately, there are times when parents can't have children, but that doesn't mean that you don't fulfill the mitzvah pre-revu at all. The Gemara has a line, Koha Megado Esben Chavero, Mala Alav Hakosov Ki'ilu Yilado, that if I raise my friend's child, right, so the pasuk considers it as if you bore the child. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Ishos that Ben Azai never married, and the reason why Ben Azai never married, the Gemara says, is nafsho chashka b'Torah. And the Rambam writes that by having students and by transmitting Torah values, there is somewhat of a fulfillment of the mitzvah per revu. And the Chofetz Chaim writes in a number of his works, you know, people who think, you know, that unfortunately I never had children and they feel terrible about themselves, don't feel terrible about yourself. If you are transmitting Jewish values to others, if you adopt a child and raise that child and transmit Torah values, or you have Talmidim, you have students, right, or you have values that you transmit in a whole host of ways, that is a fulfillment of Pru Revu to a certain extent. And that is really one of the beautiful things about adoption. There's a discussion on the first page of Eben HaEzer in the Chachma Shlomo on the page of Shulchan Aruch about what that word ki'ilu means. Malav kasav ki'ilu yilado. Does ki'ilu mean it's as if it's like a little bit of the mitzvah per revu? Is it like a slightly different type of mitzvah? There's a whole discussion. But the fact is that we assume that there's a real mitzvah in terms of adopting children. Now, we also assume, like we mentioned, that there is preference given to adopting non-Jewish children. But this, of course, raises the question about how do you convert such a child? Can you convert this child? How do you? Conversion, like we mentioned, involves three processes for a male, two for a female. That's today. There used to be a carbon involved, but unfortunately we don't have that anymore. But conversion for a male involves milah and tevilah and kabbalas ol mitzvos. For a female, it's tevilah and kabbalas ol mitzvos. So I understand. I can do tevilah, I could do milah on the child. Great. Jim dandy. Wonderful. But how do you do kabbalas ol mitzvos? What happens to the acceptance of mitzvos, which is part and parcel of making someone Jewish? How do you convert a child? Okay. Zuck the Gemara? Yeah? We barely said anything.
Okay, go ahead. I'll ask the
question after. Zuck the Gemara. Amar Rav Huna. Ready? Amar Rav Huna. First source, right after a Mishnah. Amar Rav Huna. Ger katan makbilan oso al das bezdin. Rav Huna says that a ger katan, a child, ger, you immerse him al das bezdin. Through the da'as, through the knowledge of bezdin. Apparently, what the Gemara is saying is that although the child does not have the maturity and the ability to accept mitzvot, but das bezdin, the bezdin is instilling that in the child. That's what the Gemara says. Right? Mabinoso adas bezdin. Now, one question to think about in this Gemara, of course, is there are two ger katan matbilanoso, no? What about the mila? The Gemara only speaks about the tevila, that the bezdin does the immersion. What about the mila? If it's a ger, if it's a little boy, the Rishonim all grapple with that question. That's not our topic for tonight. We'll leave it. Zok the Gemara, my kamash malan, what's the chiddush? What does this teach us? Dizuchus hulo v'zachin la'adam shelo b'fanav. The chiddush over here is, says the Gemara, that the bezdin can immerse this child and give him the benefit, or give her the benefit of Jewishness. We have a rule in halacha called zachin la'adam shelo b'fanav. Zachin la'adam shelo b'fanav means I can do something on your behalf if it's a benefit for you. No? Ein chavin lo ela b'fanav. If I want to hurt you, I don't want to hurt anyone here. But were I to want to hurt you, right? Were I to want something that's not for your benefit, so then, right, it has to be b'fanav. It has to be that you're present and aware, and then I do, right? But zochin la'adam, if I'm doing a benefit for you, I walk down the street and I see a $100 bill and I pick it up and I say, I want this $100 bill to belong to Shmerel. Guess what? It belongs to Shmerel. Because $100 is a benefit in most cases, right? In most cases, unless the FBI will get you for it for some reason. I don't know. So the Gemara said,
put your income over
some
IRS. Right, put you over a tax threshold. Right? So, frankly, Gemara, my kamashim, what's the chiddush of mapin oso das bezdin? Don't we know it's a zuchus? It's a benefit. And zachin l'adam shalom b'fanav. And frankly, my tenina, and we already learned that, zachin l'adam shalom b'fanav, v'ein chavin lo, v'ein chavin l'adam shalom b'fanav. I can give you benefit when you're not present. But I cannot do a chov, something that is to your detriment, unless you're here. So zok the Gemara, very interesting line. Mahu detema over kochavim behefkera nichalei. Da kaim alon de eved vadai behefkera nichalei. I would have thought that you'd rather not be Jewish. You know, there's an expression out there that Reb Moshe Feinstein didn't like, and many didn't like, tshver tzayin ayid. It's not good to be Jewish. That's sort of what this. What? It's hard. It's difficult, right? So Zaktigma, I would have thought that it's not a benefit to be Jewish, no? Because Mahu Detem, I thought, if you're not Jewish, you could do whatever you want. If you're not Jewish, you could carry without an eruv. Right? Right? You'd rather have the license and the freedom. Why do I have that? We assume that an Eved, right? The Gemara says an Eved would rather remain an Eved than become Jewish. A slave, right, does not have the full thrust of mitzvos. and the slave has a shifcha kena'anis who he can be with all the time at will, and it's behef kera nichalei. He prefers the freedom and the license. Kamash malon, the Gemara says, dahani mili gadol, de ta'am ta'am de isura. That's only an adult who already tasted the flavor of iser, the gishmaka flavor. Gishmak is another word that's very hard to translate into English. No, it's just a good word. Right? It was already tasted the good flavor of iser. Avakatan zuchosulo. But for a katan who's not yet enjoyed averas, so it's a zuchus to become Jewish. So says the Gemara, I would have thought that being Jewish is not a benefit for you. Why? Because if you're not Jewish, you have all the license in the world. Says the Gemara, nope, you're making a mistake, right? It's only not a benefit once you already tasted the Isurim. But a katan, a child has not yet tasted an Isur, so of course being Jewish is a tremendous benefit. And therefore, zok the Gemara, ger katan, mapilin oso adas bezin. That's what the Gemara says. Beautiful Gemara. Batya. You're very from. apparently, people, the idea of benefit versus something that's to my detriment is not governed by objective standards. Objectively speaking, we believe that being Jewish is better because our neshama is elevated, we have a different portion of Olam Haba, etc. There's so many, I'm not going to say that being Jewish is not wonderful. However, for someone who already was exposed to the license and the freedom of not being bound by Torah and mitzvos, so they want, sometimes people want stuff that's not good for them, no? Coca-Cola. I love Coca-Cola, right? It's probably not so good for me, and I probably drink a lot too much of it, right? Sometimes people like stuff that's not good for them in a more objective sort of way. That, I think, is what the Gemara is grappling with, right? Now, yeah.
I'm going to throw a wrench into all this. I don't remember which Mar said this, but I think it's in the Avodah Zarah. It says that a non-Jew cannot learn, is not allowed to learn Torah. So if they can't learn Torah, how can they convert?
Okay, so we spoke, actually we did not yet really speak about this. That question is more about an older convert than a younger convert. What I'll tell you is that Rebbe Akiva Eiger points out in the Tshuva to Machlokes between himself and Taisvis. We generally assume that we do teach Torah to non-Jews once they express the desire to convert. There's a discussion, Tshuva Rebbe Akiva Eiger, some say you're not allowed to teach Torah to a non-Jew even in the process of conversion. The Minchas Aluzer has a tshuva where he says if you try to be Megari someone according to Rebbe Akiva Eiger, you're in violation of Wafnei Iver. Because...
So according to him, how does someone convert?
Great question. I don't know. I mean, honestly, I think the answer is that you see that someone's sincere and they're committed to sign up for a very long process of learning after the conversion. Yeah. And it's very difficult. It's very hard to understand. Now, the Gemara continues, and the Gemara... Maybe we'll talk about the continuation of the Gemara a little bit later on. But the fact is, this line of ger katan matbil noso das bezdin, because it's a zechus, because it's a benefit. It's a benefit. It's good to be Jewish. Now, a few things have to be said over here. The most Rishonim understand that the benefit of being Jewish is that A, you're Jewish, B, that you're Jewish and you keep Torah and mitzvahs, no? To just be Jewish and not keep Torah and mitzvahs is not the benefit the Gemara is talking about. The benefit that we're talking about is that keeping Torah and mitzvahs is the objective benefit of getting into Olam Haba because I keep Torah and mitzvahs, etc. As such, the Achronim say, almost everyone, unanimously among the Poskim say, that the rules of Ger Katan only apply when the rules of Ger Katan only apply when the adoptive parents are religious. Let's say you have someone who the adoptive parents are not religious. So this child is going to be raised, and what, you're telling me he's Jewish? But being Jewish and not keeping Shabbos and not keeping kosher, that ain't a benefit. You're going to end up suffering a lot worse because, right? So in that case, the Jewishness doesn't take effect. The rule of ger katan apinos adas bez is only because it's a zechus, it's a benefit. And it's only a benefit if the adoptive parents are religious. I probably mentioned to you at one point in the shiurim, I have a cousin in Israel who's not religious, and she had this terrible medical condition that she could not become pregnant at all. And what they basically did, I think she had a uterus, but she didn't have ovaries, actually. So she had an egg donor, a Polish non-Jewish woman, donated an egg that was implanted in my cousin. Then there's a big question about the child that's born. Is the child born Jewish or non-Jewish? No, because the biological mother is a Polish non-Jew. The birth mother, right, is a Jewish girl, a Jewish woman. So that's a complicated child number one. Usually in these situations, we say, you know what you do? Convert the baby! Right? But in this case, right, well, the mother's not religious. How are you going to convert the baby? Right? That's a very, very serious question. Now, that's a case in Israel also. Geirus in Israel is not only a halachic issue, like it is in America, it's also like somewhat of a political issue. It's a big deal. It's a very serious question. Yeah, Avi?
So if this child grows up and wants to be a Baal Tshuva, he actually has to convert.
Or... Yeah. She, yeah. But yeah. I think so. Yeah, David and then Lisa.
What's better, to be a Jewish Tinoch Shemishpa or a non-Jew?
Yeah, so there are some who say, you know what, convert them, and most assume that to be a Jewish Tinoch Shenishba is worse than being a... That's precisely this question. By the way, the poskim who say that if you, the adoptive parents are not religious, that you cannot have a case of Ger Katan, is the Minchas Yitzchak in Chelek Yomos HaMin Tzadi Tes. I give you the Minchas Yitzchak on the second side of the sheet. On the Sri De'esh and the Tshuva and the Chelek Beis HaMin Tzadi Hei, I think it's pretty accepted by poskim, and what we're basically saying is that it's better to be, there's no onesh, right? Tinok Shenishba, the pshat is that there only is no onesh because I'm an ones, right? But if I'm a guy, so there's no onesh because I have no tzivoy.
Right.
So.
No.
It's a very theoretical, the poskim seem to be assuming, right, all the poskim say not to convert a child in these situations, are saying, you know what? The it's better not to be Jewish than to be a non-observing Jew. Now, again, the concept of Tinoch Shenishba is a complicated concept. In halacha, you're right. You're raising a good question, but I'm just presenting what the poskim say.
Well, I mean, one could argue that one could
No, you're saying maybe the poskim are not talking about a case of a Tinoch Shenishba.
Maybe they're talking about a case.
Perhaps. I don't know of anyone who makes that distinction between whether I'm raised in a religious society or irreligious society. That's sort of the distinction you're making. It's an interesting point. It's worth thinking about. I don't know anyone who makes it. Yeah, Aliza?
My question is, like, what constitutes religious? Like, versus non-religious? Like, if you're a show, right.
Modern Orthodox?
Right, or someone like loses their religious status, so the child might have been, and then
most poskim who are involved in adoption say a few things. That if a couple wants to adopt a child and convert the child, A, the couple has to commit to sending the kid to an Orthodox school. B, that there has to be semblance of Shabbos and Kashrus. We spoke in passing about this in the Reb Chaim Moses Tshuvas. Shabbos and Kashrus are viewed as like the yardsticks. Now, we ask, well, what type of Shabbos? Full Shabbos? Half Shabbos? We're not getting involved in Shabbos.
Holds by the ear, doesn't hold by the ear.
Right, we're not getting involved. We use the yardstick of Shabbos and Kashrus. Yom Kippur is Shabbos, right? So Taras HaMishpacha, Reb Chaim Oz in that Shuvah mentioned Shabbos and Kashrus. I don't think he mentions Taras HaMishpacha. Usually we put all three together.
It doesn't have to do with the kid.
Shabbos and Kashrus has to do with the kid. Right. You'd have no idea. Correct. That's correct. So that is issue number one. Issue number two. The Avni Nezer has a tshuva in Evan HaEzer Simen Kuf Tzadi Dalet Os Dalet, where the Avni Nezer argues that whenever I say Zochen LaAdam Shalom B'fonav, if I want to do an act that's a benefit for you, it's only a zechus for you if eventually you find out about it. If you never know that it was done, if a tree falls in the forest and you don't hear it and you never know that happened, it doesn't matter. That's not called zechus. The rule, and he bases this on Mishonim and Bava Basra, but his basic idea is that zochen l'adam shelo b'fonav only makes sense if you know that the zechus was done for you, if you know that eventually you benefited. As such, so there's an obligation to tell the child that you were adopted. No? Because if I don't tell the kid that kid was adopted, what will emerge is the kid will never know. The idea of Zachar Yitlalim Shalom B'fonav is that it works l'mafreya. It works retroactively. Once I find out that the benefit was done for me, and I'm happy about it, so you say, oh, it works from the time that the benefit was given. It works retroactively from the time the benefit... I pick up the $100... right, and it becomes yours. When you find out that the money is yours, then it turns out it was yours always from the moment I picked it up. But if I never tell you, we don't say Zachem Adam Shalom B'fanav. As such, you have to tell the kid that you were adopted. Because if I don't tell the kid that they were adopted, it's possible that the entire adoption won't work. Because the entire Gairus, thank you, won't work because of Zachar and Shalom. We should also point out that adoption itself, even though legally speaking, you become the child of so-and-so and so-and-so, but halachically, you're not their child necessarily, no? We'll discuss some issues. In other words, technically, let's say a parent adopt two different children, no? Really,
yeah.
The brother and sister are raised together in the same house, they can marry each other.
Theoretically.
It's a bad idea.
I know a family like that. I mean, they've married other people.
But it's a bad idea, probably. But, yeah, David?
Is this the way? Do we possibly play?
Yes. If the kid was adopted by non... a kid was adopted from non-Jews and never finds out... So, Rav Shachter passes like this on the Nezer. Right, when he was four, tragically he dies. So we'll talk about aspects of that in a few moments. Whether the kid is buried in a Jewish cemetery or not, right? Do I assume the kid was Jewish or not? We'll talk. It's probably Machlokes HaRishonim. We'll talk about it. Yeah.
Is it possible that there is a velus by adoption?
So a velus by adoption. So the Ramot Paskins. At the end of Hilchos Avelos, if I lose a dear friend, I'm allowed to dedicate Shiva. I'm not obligated in Shiva, obviously. It's not one of the seven relatives. But I can... So the Achronim say that it's a good idea for the child to volunteer a Shiva. So you know Hag Avelos, basically, of Shiva and Shloshim. The Avelos of Yud Beis Chodesh, you're not Nohag. When you lose an adoptive parent, the 12 months. The reason for that, Rav Shechter explains, is because the Maharal of Prague has a idea which is intuitive, that I can volunteer to do mitzvah saseh, But there's no concept of volunteering on something that's fundamentally a lav. Something that's fundamentally an isser that I shouldn't do, so the idea of volunteering doesn't make sense. Volunteering makes sense to do something positive. So the avelos of Shiva and Shloshim, they're positive acts that you have to do. However, the avelos of Yud Beis Chodesh is only prohibitions.
No, you have to say Kaddish.
Well, so the Kaddish, we assume, is a separate element from avelos. Remember, you're allowed to technically hire someone to say Kaddish. Kaddish is not part of mourning per se. Kaddish is, we think of it as being connected to mourning, but technically Kaddish is a separate thing than Avelos. Right? In Breuers, for example, only one person says Kaddish, right? And they have a whole complicated rotation of who says it. Right? Now, yeah.
So if you take one step further, if there is Avelos by adoption, is the adopted child
so the many assume that the halacha of aninus is based on osek b'mitzvah potter min hamitzvah. Insofar as you are the one who's being osek and preparing for the funeral, right? So that would apply. I had a case like this.
Like a thing.
Any adopted child to sit shiva for the adoptive parent. It's not halakhically your parent, but they raised you like your parent. Oh, my cousins, yeah. I had my aunt married an altar mirror, and my mother's sister, and it was not a great shidduch, and they had a few kids, and it didn't work out. And my cousins considered their father really to be my aunt's second husband, who wasn't there biological father. So when their biological father died, he was a very big Talmud Chacham. They sat Shiva because that was their biological father. Then a few months later, they sat Shiva again when my aunt's second husband died. That is who they considered their real father. And it was a much sadder Shiva in some ways by when Chaim died, then when Yankel died, whatever.
Were they like
adults in that? Yeah. Yeah, they're adults. This was a few years, probably 10 years ago. I don't remember anymore. That's the basic story over there. So now, so we should tell the child that you were adopted to recognize that it's a zuchus, and then it ends up working. But there's another reason why we tell the kid that they are adopted, at least according to half of the Rishonim. Let's go on in the Gemara. The Gemara says, Amar Rav Yosef, here are three lines before the end of this piece of Gemara. Amar Rav Yosef, Higdilu Yecholim Limchos. When they reach majority age, Bar Bas Mitzvah, they can protest. They can say that they are not Jewish. Right? Ich will nicht. You have to say it in Yiddish. If you don't say it in Yiddish, it doesn't take effect. No. You can say, I don't want to be Jewish. Higdilu, they grow up. Yecholim Limchos, they can protest their Jewishness. That's what the Gemara says. There was a kid in my shir in YU who, it turned out actually that we ended up converting him afterwards because it was like a very weird story. But he always thought that he was an adopted kid who was converted. That's what he thought. And in fact, that is true. And around the time of his bar mitzvah, right after his bar mitzvah, so his Rebbe walked over to him and says, Shmerel, which is not his real name, we are trying to distort facts, said, Shmerel, you were adopted. You should know that you were adopted, and if you don't want to be Jewish, like, that's your business, and you could just walk away. Walk away. And Shmerel, not his real name, said, no, I want to be Jewish, and said, great. And then he became Jewish. Right, so that is what he really thought happened. It turned out that the Beis Din that converted him when he was a little kid was a conservative Beis Din that was comprised of two men and a woman. So even if you want to hold like the biggest kula in the world, he was really non-Jewish. And we found out about this actually in the year that he was in my shiur. And he told me about this, and like we had plans to convert him like the next day. And that day, it turned out in Shir, we had like 9 guys for Mincha. And they're like, well, you know, no, we have 10. Like, because he's there. I'm like, oh, whatever, I gotta go, I'm sorry. No minion today, sorry guys. And they're like, what's going on? Like, you're crazy. So that was like my exciting Gera story with him.
What? You shouldn't have any work.
No, the thing that used to get me the worst is like a guy would show up in YU, and inevitably he'd come in and say, Rebbe, my Rebbe in Eretz Yisrael said I should ask you a question. I'm like, okay, what's it? He says, you know, my mother, Judaism, this, that. Like, come on. Like, why do you dump this on us? Like, you knew about this the whole year he's in Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael.
Well,
like, come on. That stuff, like, frustrates me. Right? Well, take care of it yourself. In most cases, these are from kids, and, you know, it's not that they want to be Jewish. But the halacha is, ger katan, if you converted as a child, higdilu yicholam limchos. When you grow up, when you become bar bas mitzvah, you can protest. Now, the Rishonim, and David, this is going to answer something you asked a few minutes ago. The Rishonim have a discussion, what does higdilu yicholam limchos mean? Right? When do you make this protest? When you think about it, right? And the Gemara says in a few lines, kevan shehigdilu sha'achas v'lo michta shuvan yicholam limchos. Once you've already been bar mitzvah, or bas mitzvah, for an hour, and you didn't protest, you can't protest anymore. So how exactly do you do this? The first second you become bar bas mitzvah, that's when you protest?
Hey, Mom, call off the party.
Right? How exactly do you do this? So some Rishonim say that the protest begins before the bar mitzvah. That the kid is... that the kid is already demonstrating that he or she doesn't want to be Jewish. And then they continue that demonstration after their bar mitzvah age. So you say, sorry, you're not Jewish. That is the way the Shita Mekubetza says it. Others say that Higdil Yicholam Mimchos, Sha'a Achas doesn't mean the first moment that you are bar or bas mitzvah, even though the simple reading of the Gemara is like that, but means the first moment that you're told about it. But let's say they don't get to tell the kid until 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month later, whatever it is. So at that moment, that's when you could protest.
A month later then.
A month later after the technical bar mitzvah. But they tell them, by the way, you were adopted. Do you want to be Jewish? Right? At the first moment, if the kid says, I want to be Jewish, you're Jewish. The kid says, no, I'm not interested. Sorry. Right? Then you walk away and you're not Jewish. That's Higdilu Yicholam Limchos. That's what the Gemara says. Now, the Rishonim discuss what exactly this protest is. Is the pshat in this protest that I have to actively say I do not want to be Jewish? But if I don't actively say I don't want to be Jewish, so I am Jewish? Or do we say that you have to actively say I want to be Jewish to be Jewish?
And what is
right? In other words, the two possibilities are, what does Higdilu Yicholam Limchos mean? Do I have to actively opt out, or do I have to opt in? Now, Tosfos has a position that is quoted by the Ritva, but we don't have it in our printed Tosfos on the page. I don't think we even get to this bound. I'll have to see. We're running a little bit behind. But Tosfos has a position that you have to opt in. We began tonight's conversation by speaking about, one second, what's going on over here? Ger Katan, little child, not bar mitzvah, where's the Kabbalah's or mitzvahs? How do you accept it? So Tosfos says, you know what? The Judaism that we give this Ger Katan is pending, and the Kabbalah's Ol Mitzvos happens when you become Bar Mitzvah at age 13. That means that you have to opt in. That means, by the way, fundamentally, many Acharina point out, going to Tosfos, you should bring a Bezdin. You should have 3 people present and say, Yanko Shmerel, Dvoshke, Yento, whatever your name is, you want to be Jewish? And the kid says yes, and we say, oh, that was the Kabbalah's Ol Mitzvos, now you're Jewish.
What if the kid says, I want to be Reform Jewish?
That might not be a Kabbalah's Ol Mitzvos, right? And then it has to be...
I'm Jewish.
Right?
I love Yiddish.
Right, yeah, you have to... Right, yeah, you have to figure these things out. But Higdilu Yicholam Limchos, according to Tosfos, means you have to opt in. That means that the ger katan is not a full ger. So David, you asked before, what happens if you die at age 4, before the bar mitzvah? According to Tosfos, you're not a full-fledged Jew, no? You're a pending Jew.
Are you a Jew or not?
You're not, I can't say that you are a full Jew. I don't know what we would do in terms of burying you. But according to the Ritvan, the other Rishonim argue on Tosfos, you're a full Jew. Because you have to opt out. And unless you opt out, we assume that you're in.
Are you in Tama Bilobo? You are in
Tama? No.
According to half of the Rishonim, yes. It's a shy of many things. I don't know
so
the answer. According to Tosis, it's very complicated. According to the Ritva, you're Jewish. Right? You're Jewish unless you opt out. Avi?
Once you're
Mekabel O Mitzvot, you're a full Jew. And then let's say later on you decide not to be Jewish. You know what you are? You are now an irreligious Jew. There are such things.
Yeah.
Right? You're not from Jew. Got it. Okay. It happens. Right? That's the issue according to...
Okay.
In the Jewish cemetery? That, right, that's what David was asking. Where do you get buried? In which cemetery? I don't know the answer. We have to look into that. But it should depend on this dispute between Tosfos and the Ritva. The last point... What? The Ritva quotes the Tosfos, then the Ritva argues on Tosfos. In other words, the Ritva says that we assume that you're Jewish and you have to opt out.
What if you never knew in the first place?
So if I never knew in the first place, if I'm never told that I'm Jewish?
Well, let's say the four-year-old's never been told.
So,
even according to the Ritva.
According to the Ritva, you are Jewish.
You are
Jewish until you opt out.
Uh-huh. But there's no requirement that you know?
Well, the Avni Nezer says that there is. Let's assume that like the Avni Nezer. Oh. Right? Yeah, correct. Right. Now, okay, just one last point, which is as follows. One of the big issues with adoption that comes up today, you see, Ger Katan, Mapir Noso Adas Besen. Look at the way Rashi learns. Rashi learns, Ger Katan Adas Besen, Im Ein Lo Av, the Imo Hevi Asola Hiskayer. Rashi learns that the case is that there's no dad, no father, whatever it is, and the mother brings the child to convert. Obviously, if the father bring the child to convert, that also would give Besdin the right to convert the child. But let's say mother doesn't bring the child to convert, and father doesn't bring the child to convert to Judaism. Does Besdin have a right to just take kids and throw them into the mikvah and make them Jewish? Can they do this on their own? Rashi would presumably say no. Rashi would say you can only become Jewish if a parent brings you. The Rambam... What?
What is that for? Social...
The parent wants the kid to be Jewish. Again, one of the cases that the Poskim discusses is the very unfortunate case. Let's say you have a Jewish man who had a non-Jewish girlfriend and had a child, so the child is non-Jewish, then the parent brings the kid to convert. Right? Now, again, that gets involved in our previous conversation. Well, how religious are they? Right? Okay, got it. But sometimes they're both becoming religious. Very often, the parent and the child are converting at the same time. Those are the cases of Ger Katan. A parent is bringing a child. That's what Rashi learns. Rambam and other Rishonim disagree with Rashi, and they say that even if the child comes on his or her own, you can still have a case of Ger Katan. Some go so far as to say that technically the Rav Yaakov quoted by the Mordechai has a discussion. Maybe even if you convert a child bar karcho, it still works against anyone's will. Now, this, by the way, is the relevant discussion in terms of adoption today. If the parents hand the child to the adoptive parents, the biological parents say, here, adoptive parents, take the child, and they know the child is Jewish, so then everyone would say there's a din of Ger Katan. However, let's say, yeah, because the parents, by handing the child to the Jewish adoptive parents, They're saying, we want you to raise him as a Jew.
Oh, the non-Jewish parents.
Right, the non-Jewish parents hand the non-Jewish biological parents hand the child to the Jewish adoptive parents. They're saying, we want you to raise him as a Jew. But today, when you get a child from an adoption agency, what happens? The child was in an agency. They don't know where it's going to go. Do the parents want the child to become Jewish?
Yeah.
Maybe not. I don't know. We certainly don't know that the parents want the child to become Jewish. So why is the child becoming Jewish? The parents want to adopt it? Now, it's not that they're doing it against the child's will. It's not the same as like better than taking a child and putting him into the mikvah and saying, you are now Jewish. The adoptive parents want to do it. But halachically, do they have the rights of making a ger katan? According to Rashi, it is not clear. According to Rashi, you could argue, and Rav Moshe Feinstein in his Tshuva in Siman Kuf Samach Beis says something to the effect of, you know, people aren't really asking me, and they have to adopt the children anyway, hemming and hawing. Hey, Rav Moshe sounds like he's not 100% convinced that this is the proper practice. The Minchas Yitzchak in this tshuva, in letter Chaf Hei, he writes, La halacha l'maisa ein lo zuz mipsak de v'yashochana, k'ma shkaz chus mahari, levush mordchai, memeil, la halacha l'maisa, im heve mi daito o mi das avivo imo, if the conversion is done because of the das of the child. Let's say the child is 5 years old and the child says, I want to be Jewish. 7 years old, 9 years old, whatever it is, before they jabar bas mitzvah, because I want to be Jewish. Or it's midas aviv v'imo megayrin af lechatchila. V'im hevi bal karcha, and if it's against the child's will, the child is kicking and screaming, saying, I don't want to be Jewish, no way. Right? Af b'diyeved, it's not good gevurah. V'im shelo bal karcha, v'shelo midas, let's say it's not against the child's will, and it's not with the child's consent, ein megayrin lechatchila, b'diyeved, it is a good gevurah. Notice that Minchas Yitzchak basically says we should not convert children in our typical adoption cases today. Rav Moshe Feinstein hems and haws. He says that the minig is that we convert. He doesn't sound like he's endorsing it 100%, but it is a question in these cases. Lamaisa, everyone adopts in these cases, and everyone converts the child, you know? But as a strict matter of halacha, there is room to question what this is based on. Obviously, there's much more to say about Ger Katan. We didn't discuss whether it's still Reis or Derabbanan. There's much more for us to flesh out. I gave you the Tosis. Perhaps next week we could continue with Ger Katan if people are interested. Or people want more Ger Katan next week?
Yeah.
So more Ger Katan next week. And then we'll talk about revoking Geras, I guess, 2 weeks from now. And then at some point we're going to move on past Geras. That's still for a while. Okay, thank you for coming. Yeah, bye. Yeah. So there are certain Syrian communities don't accept any converts. That was a special takana that they made when they came to America. I think in Aleppo they used to accept converts. In America they don't. There's some articles I have about that takana, but that's like a very modern thing. That's right. That's the question. We'll have to. Okay. We'll talk about that when we talk about who is a Bezdin that's authorized to convert. Maybe we'll talk about that issue then. Okay. Thank you for coming. Have a good night.